Mr. Speaker, I am a Canadian, I am a Jew, and I am a Zionist. I am proud to have been born in this country. I am proud that my family came here in the 19th century and helped build this country. My family members fought
in the
World
War I. That's the voice of Anthony Housefather, Montreal Liberal MP for Mount Royal and Parliamentary Secretary to the head of the Treasury Board. And it's an excerpt from his now famous Cri du Cœur speech, which he delivered in the House of Commons last week. If you haven't seen it yet, I've put the link in our show notes. He spoke passionately for nearly 10 minutes during the debate Monday on that NDP motion that would have seen Canada recognize Palestine as an independent state, among other things, and why Housefather was going to vote no. He calls it horrendous when he watched a half dozen of the NDP caucus members, plus some of his own party's Liberal colleagues, wearing keffiyehs in the House of Commons and applauding after voting to cut arms sales permits to Israel, resuming financial aid to UNRWA long before the UN's own investigation is complete, and supporting whatever the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court rule about Israel committing genocide. Even though the final motion dropped the whole recognizing Palestine part after his own party surprised everybody about 20 minutes before the vote was going to happen and brought in 14 amendments, which watered the NDP's motion down a lot, but Housefather still voted no, and he was one of only three Liberal MPs to vote against his own party joining the Conservatives in trying to vote it down. After the vote, Housefather told reporters he needed to reflect on his political future. Could he stay Liberal, which has been his party since he joined the Young Liberals while at university 30 years ago? Or will he do what other prominent Quebec politicians have done, like Lucien Bouchard and Jean Charest, switch parties, leave Ottawa, and go home to Quebec to become the premier of that province?
I'm really, really soul-searching, and soul-searching not only for me, but really for the community. And that's why I wanted to listen to the community, because do I need on behalf of the community to send some message?
I'm Ellen Besner, and this is what Jewish Canada sounds like on Monday, March the 25th, 2024. Welcome to the CJN Daily, a podcast of the Canadian Jewish News, sponsored by Metropia. Anthony Housefather spent the weekend in Montreal attending the funeral of former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney, and he also dropped into a community Purim party. And he was talking a lot about what it would take for him to stay in the Liberal Party where he's been since 1994, while finishing his law degrees and his MBA. He did work for a bit in private industry before entering politics full-time. He was a city councillor in Hampstead, then mayor of Côte Saint-Luc for 10 years, before he jumped into the federal arena in 2015 in Mount Royal, one of the safest Liberal seats in Canadian politics. It's been Liberal since the 40s, it's 30% Jewish, and it was held by some illustrious Canadians, most notably by Pierre Trudeau, Sheila Feinstone, and Erwin Kotler. And Housefather's been re-elected twice more, and the Conservatives haven't come close. But that could change if Housefather switches sides. After all, the issues important to voters in his riding aren't just about Israel. Housefather voted against his own party back in September when the government adopted a new Official Languages Act, which he felt didn't protect the rights of English-speaking Quebecers. For that mutiny, Housefather was shuffled out of his job as a parliamentary secretary. For 4 months, although ever loyal, he never complained publicly and only recently was reinstated. Will he stay where he is and work for change from within, or should he jump to Pierre Poilievre's team where he might get a cabinet post? Anthony Housefather joined me from his home in Montreal. I want to know, did you write the I am Canadian, I am a Zionist speech printed in advance, or was it like an impromptu thing? How did the speech come about?
So absolutely, I always speak extemporaneously. I never write speeches. I write like lines down on a paper. So I have like 5 or 6 lines that I know I want to cover in the speech, but I never write speeches. So that was all from the heart. It was all at the moment, having listened to the debate and what other people said at the debate, and the I am Canadian, I am a Jew, and I am a Zionist came from listening to others who were attacking Israel and clearly not understanding, you know, that Jewish Canadians are not responsible for the actions of Israel, but why it is so important for us to identify with Israel. And I had seeing the ignorance from some other colleagues, having listened to their speeches, I thought it was a really important way to lead into the speech and to explain why Jewish Canadians, the vast majority of us, believe in a state of Israel.
When you saw colleagues across the island, some of your own too, wearing keffiyehs and channeling Vivian Silver's memory, what went through your mind?
Well, having been to Kfar Aza and having seen homes, I didn't see Vivian Silver's home, she was in another kibbutz, but I saw homes where people were burned to death in their safe rooms, like Vivian Silver. I mean, I thought it was incredibly appalling to use her memory to defend these positions that they were espousing. And yes, it was horrifying for me to see people do that in the House of Commons. And the worst thing for me was Heather McPherson wearing a keffiyeh being saluted by a standing ovation by many of my colleagues in the Liberal Party. And I thought that was just horrendous.
Interesting, Janika Atwin abstained, but many of your colleagues, three of your colleagues, Jewish colleagues, did not. Have you spoken with them? Julie Dobrizin, well, Karina wasn't there, of course, and neither was Yara. But did you speak to them? Have you reached out or they reached to you?
But before the vote and after the vote, I have spoken to Julie. Julie is a very good friend, and Julie was going to vote no until the amendments were tabled. And Julie's riding is, of course, very different than mine. And
Emily Muslim riding, especially near Jones Avenue and Danforth, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yes, I've spoken to her since the vote. I have not spoken to Yara. Karina called me this morning, but on the subject of the vote, no, I haven't asked them, you know, about their votes. I know, you know, that only myself and Marco Mendicino and Ben Carr voted no from the Liberal side.
You're considering your options crossing the floor. Is that actually true, what that headline was?
Well, what I said is I'm considering all options. And all options for me means all options. I intend to run again in the next election in Mount Royal. I intend to be reelected in Mount Royal. But I really need to soul search after what happened on Monday, because I was, you know, last year, as you remember, Ellen, I was the only member of parliament that voted against the language bill. And I thought, I mean, most English-speaking Montrealers, including most members of the Jewish community, have been liberals their whole lives. And largely, at least in my lifetime, it's because we believe the Liberal Party would best defend federalism and protect us from Quebec separation, and because the Liberal Party was the one that stood up for the rights of minority groups in Quebec, including the English-speaking community and the Jewish community. And so in my elections, all of my promises to the community have been that I will fight for the rights of the minority language communities across the country, including English-speaking Quebec. I will fight for the Jewish community and fight against anti-Semitism, and that I will fight for Israel. And in 2015, the Prime Minister came to my riding, and at a synagogue in my riding, said that there will be no daylight between ourselves and the Conservatives on Israel, other than the fact that we won't use it as a wedge issue amongst Canadian Jews. And I think we lived up to that from 2015 until the fall of 2023. But as the war started, you know, we were fine the first month. And then in December, we voted in favor of a UN resolution that I opposed, that called at that time for an immediate ceasefire without conditions, even though our statement with Australia and New Zealand didn't say that. Then we were unable to articulate clearly that Israel was not committing genocide. Then it was the refunding of UNRWA that I opposed, and along with like Marco and Ben have, you know, and some others have made the fight, but it's been difficult, and then this vote came, and that NDP motion, the original NDP motion, was so anti-Israel and so horrendous that I made clear to Minister Joly, to the Prime Minister and his staff, that to me, that vote was a red line. That to me, we had to, as a government position, say no, which would be the normal thing in an opposition day motion that the government totally didn't agree with. You would just vote against the NDP motion. You know, and what happened was, instead of voting against this horrible anti-Israel motion that created a false equivalency between Israel and a terrorist group, Hamas, they decided to amend it. And yes, those amendments made the resolution much more balanced and much better, but it still wasn't good. It still, for example, called for an arms ban, which is ridiculous when Israel is at war, that we're telling Israel we're not going to ship arms to Israel, but Hamas is going to get arms from Iran, and Hezbollah is going to get arms from Iran, and if all the world followed Canada, then Hezbollah and Hamas would be firing missiles at Israel, and Israel wouldn't be able to defend itself.
Right. And as minister, as parliamentary secretary to the Minister of Procurement, you know a little thing or two
yeah.
about what Canada buys from
Yeah.
Israel.
Yeah, a lot more than Israel than we sell to
Tell
Israel
me
in
about
terms of
that.
this.
Tell me about that. What do you know? I mean, there's, is it four times more? Like, what do we get from Israel?
Yeah, I mean, the Defense Department buys considerable amount more from Israel, multiple times more than we buy from them, than we ship to them. And all the Canadian government does, by the way, is we issue licenses to let people ship non-lethal weapons to Israel. We don't, like, the United States actually gives aid to Israel. The United States actually sends billions of dollars to Israel, weapons or other things. We don't do any of that.
Right.
And
back to the motion, though. Is it true that the Conservatives were playing Hava Nagila in the corridors while the voting was happening? We heard that. Is that true?
I didn't hear it. I don't know. I do know that there was an Israeli flag in the Conservative lobby.
What would it take for you, in terms of your own principles, to join the Conservative Party, which we need to remind our listeners had supported the truckers, which some people did not agree with, and there were there was a swastika flag at the truckers' event? What conditions would you have to meet to join them if you were going to do that?
I'm not going to negotiate with myself on air. I think the main thing is I'd have to feel comfortable in my head. Whatever I did, it's the right thing for my community. And my writing is 1/3 Jewish, but I have 2/3 of my writing that's not Jewish. I have to make sure that all the views and values that I've espoused, I could still do. And I have to figure out what party, where I fit. Again, I'm normally, like most Canadian Jews, been a liberal. I think our community is very divided now, you know, and now much less divided and much more conservative since the last few months. But I really need to make sure that my values overall, and one of those very important ones would be the rights of the English-speaking minority in Quebec. The Conservatives have not historically had a good position at all on that issue, and it would be something that I would need to make sure that we had, you know, a real opening. But also I would note that the Conservatives have not had an English-speaking Montrealer in their caucus for 30 years. And so having the voice there, you know, might change things. So, you know, I think again, I just have to get comfortable in my head. I'm talking to a lot of friends and family, and thousands of people have written in telling me what they think I should do. You know, and I appreciate it. I read every email.
What did Erwin Kotler tell you?
He has given me advice, but I think that would be up to Erwin Kotler if he wants to share that with you.
You told the Canadian Jewish News covered a debate between you and David Torchman at the Spanish in Montreal, and you and David were debating. And you said Israel should and Jewish issues should not become a wedge issue because eventually the Conservatives are going to, you know, as they do, they alternate in power and with the Liberals, and this should be a bipartisan thing. Now we're at 2024. How do you feel about those words now?
So that was actually 2019, because it was during the 2019 election campaign. I remember it vividly. And so I've always believed you need to have strong voices in both parties because they alternate power. And it would be an absolute shame if one party came to power without strong voices from the Jewish community and strong pro-Israel voices in the party. And I've always believed that. And I guess my question is, after Monday, have we turned into a party that I don't fit into anymore because my voice is so not heard? And my constituent, and I think also many of my constituents are saying their voices are not being heard, and I have to listen to them. And I know that I certainly know that my being a liberal creates a real dilemma for many of my constituents when, you know, they want to vote for me, but they also don't like the party now that I'm representing. And so I accept that. And I have to work this all through in my mind. I love my liberal colleagues. You know, I will never have a bad word to say about the prime minister, about my liberal colleagues as people. They're all wonderful. You know, and I have dear friends and deep friendships there. And you know, if you ever were to leave that, you know, all of that, you know, there's a resentment there for sure. And I wouldn't want to cause pain to anybody. So all of these things are the personal, larger community, because in the end, of course, as an elected official, I have to represent a larger community before myself. All of these things sort of weigh on me. And I'm also, I think, very unusual, because normally when politicians would be having this existential angst, They would never make it public. They would never talk about it. But I've always been a very unusual politician in the sense that I always really say what I think. I never hide who I really am. And I think that draws me a lot closer to my constituents than most MPs are ever to their constituents, because we're like family. And I think that in this case, I'm not alone. I think the struggle is being had by Jewish people across the country in terms of trying to remember, like, well, generally our values align with X, but on Y.
But then they're thinking none is too many, and they go, wait, not always. And so let me ask you a question. Donald Trump, okay, just bear with me. Donald Trump said last week that any Jew who votes for the Democrats hates their religion.
Yeah, he's an idiot.
But the substance of what he asked, what he was referring to, is something that Jews are soul searching. It's like, which party do they belong to now?
Although I have to say, in the United States, I think the situation is very different. I think the Biden administration has been very supportive of Israel. I think Blinken has been very supportive of Israel. And I think the Democrats in Congress have been very supportive of Israel. Overall, there's a small percentage of their party that is not, but there, the vast majority have held pro-Israel positions.
You hear what Chuck Schumer talks about. So there's there's this change. So here's what I was wondering. In Mount Royal, the conservatives tried to get that riding when Robert Libman was running against you, my old classmate from Herzliya. And Stephen Harper, I remember, came there. That was his first stop on his election campaign because they thought there was a chance. So if you jump, there's really no risk to you because you'll get elected anyway. 50% of the vote last time. The Frank Cavallaro was way behind you, 23%. So there's really no risk to your political career. You could win no matter what because everyone likes you, right?
Well, Mount Royal has been closed twice, in the Diefenbaker election in the late 50s and in 1984. And then in 2011, Irwin won by only 5 points. He won 41-36, and so against Saleh Zeidel. In 2015, I widened that to 14%. And in 2019 and 21, I won by 32 and 34%. People would look at that and say it's one of the safest liberal ridings in the country. So, of course, there's a risk that if I'm not the liberal candidate, you know, how do I do in Mount Royal? I'm just confident. I think that most of this is as much as Anthony vote as a party vote. And I think I would be able to win however I ran, I believe. And so that's not what I'm really thinking about. Like, I'm not thinking about how do I win. I don't think anybody would see if I went to the party that got 23% of the vote in the last election that I was doing it to win the riding. Like, right? I mean, so to me, this is, again, the kind of conversations I'm having with everyone, and I'm not going to rush.
I don't think people realize you have an MBA and you got your law degree from Quebec, both universities, McGill and Concordia. What was your anti-Semitism experience, if at all, back then, or if you can remember, compared to what you're now seeing and getting a national inquiry at the Standing Committee on Justice, right?
Yesterday at the Justice Committee, they adopted my motion to do a study on anti-Semitism in Canada with a particular focus on university campuses. So I'm very pleased about that. I think it's going to be really important. And when I was in college, I don't remember any anti-Semitic incident ever. I don't remember ever feeling as a Jew that I wasn't fully equal. I never felt any anti-Semitism at all until I was elected federally.
What was the worst thing that people have said to you? I mean, you must get tons of hate mail.
Oh, yeah. You should. I mean, it's mostly that I should die. I'm a filthy Zionist. I should be, like, you know, bombed in Gaza. I should be, like, I mean, all kinds of horrible things. I should be, like, put in the gas chamber, you know, like. And then on the other hand, on the right, I get that I'm a capo or a Quisling because I'm in the Liberals. So no matter what I say or do, and how strongly I advocate for Israel and how strongly I advocate for Jews, some people, especially in the Jewish community on the far right, are the ones attacking me the most. And that's really sad.
You said you're soul searching. Are you a religious person? Are you praying? Are you going to shul? Are you talking to rabbi friends?
I am going to shul because only on Saturdays for the last long period of time, they've been asking me to come in on Saturdays to different synagogues to give the sermon and, you know, talk about anti-Semitism and talk about what's going on. But no, I'm not a religious person. I'm not in any way religious at all. I'm purely a secular Jew. I'm very tied to the Jewish community through Maccabiah, Jewish sports, Jewish volunteer organizations. I've always felt a great identity as part of the Jewish people, but I'm not religious.
I mean, imagine swimming is helping you.
Swimming and running and are always detoxifications.
You were mentioning about the terrible things people are writing, but are you getting extra Can you say whether you're getting extra security even more since the last week or so?
I wouldn't ever comment on that because, you know, I don't think people should ever know what security is there, what's not there. So I think everybody is being vigilant. I think all Jewish parliamentarians, and in fact, more than Jewish parliamentarians, others too, are getting threats. And I've never seen anything like this since I was first elected. This is a completely new level. Like, I've taken a lot of controversial stands on Quebec separatism, for example. I've never had threats from Quebec separatists that, you know, that they're going to do me harm.
Where can you not go? What can you not do? Can you just leave the house, go walk to the gym, go swim, or you have to have security?
I insist on still doing this. Like, I am not going to let myself change my life because of anything. But of course, what I do now, when I schedule a meeting, I make sure that I only do it in a safe location. I will always look when I go into a building as to where the exits are and where the escapes could be, which I never would have done before in my life. And, you know, I will not go walking or running without having friends with me. Like, I'll always go with friends now. I will never do it myself. Those are kind of just the few things. Like, most of my stuff, I'm acting completely normally, but like, there's just some things that I'm doing that are a little bit different.
But you're still able to do all your activities, going to your usual House of Commons business and everything, traveling.
Yeah.
You're still keeping your duties as...
The only difference, Ellen, is, which is really interesting, is when I first got elected in 2015, I always have been involved in the Israel relationship and Jewish issues in Canada. I'm usually a point person for the Jewish community on issues. But let's say in the normal course from 2015 till the war, Jewish issues would occupy 10% of my time as a parliamentarian. Since the last few months, it's occupying 40%, 50%, dealing with like just any problem that people have. It's all almost like I become an ombudsman for it, and they're writing my office. Being a member of the governing party gives you the ability to help with a lot of issues that you wouldn't have being in the opposition. And so that's also part of the equation of everything.
Right, because do you think the Liberals are going to lose?
Do it. The next election? Oh, I don't think I should prognosticate on what's going to happen the next election. I mean, as you know, polling is a moment in time. I've never lost an election. I've run 3 times for councillor, 3 times for mayor, 3 times for MP. I have never lost, and I would never go into an election to lose an election. Like, nobody works harder than I do in an election, and I will not lose an election. But on the national level, I don't control what happens in a national election. And again, I think people can look at the current polls. They can get a good understanding from the current polls of where things would be now. But 18 months from now, we'll have to see.
And that's what Jewish Canada sounds like for this episode of the CJN Daily, sponsored by Metropia. Integrity, community, quality, and customer care. If you want to read the printed version of our full interview, the link is in our show notes. And by the way, if the Mount Royal Conservative Party Riding Association is expecting to welcome House Father as a candidate in the next election, you sure would know it from their online presence. The Riding Association's president's name is listed, but when you click through, the website doesn't work. The French Facebook account hasn't been updated in nearly 9 years. It still shows Stephen Harper campaigning for re-election. And the English version of the Facebook account is more promising. It shows a recent visit from the popular deputy leader of the Conservatives, Melissa Lantzman. She won for the Conservatives in the most highly Jewish riding in Canada, Thornhill. What do you think Anthony Housefather should do? Write and let me know your advice. I'm at ebessner@thecjn.ca. Thanks for listening to the CJN Daily.